Hello and welcome to Elita Dongma's Shades of Murder, a podcast where I will share and discuss tales of true crime, mysteries, and all things dark and macabre. If you eat, play, and dream in Shades of Murder like me, then welcome, my kindred spirits, to your new podcast home. If you enjoy the show, please remember to follow and subscribe, share and rate, so I can present more stories to you, and we can all embrace the love, the darkness together. All of my contact information you can find in the episode description below. Please be forewarned that each episode contains specific and at times very graphic and disturbing details of the case and may not be intended for all audiences. It may seem shocking to think of elderly people committing violent crimes, in particular homicide and the concealment of a body, especially when you consider that it usually involves some degree of physical strength. However, a study in 2010 that analyzed homicides that were committed by older offenders found that in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom, the number continues to rise. It is not at all surprising to learn that older women are the most vulnerable to being murdered by their intimate partners, whether current or former, as this issue has been previously discussed and will be addressed in future episodes. What is surprising, though, is when homicides occur within an environment that is not laden with the typical elements or environmental factors one may expect. Homicides of this nature tend to encompass a history of physical or emotional abuse, excessive substance abuse, and issues of control, violence, and power. When murders happen within a home that by all accounts appears to be safe, healthy, and loving, these are the cases that I find to be the most horrifying, and it makes you wonder what, how, and when something may trigger your loved one to turn on you. This is the story of Marcia Ann Forsberg and her husband Richard. Laid out amongst the beautiful foothills of Santa Ana sits the master-planned community of Rancho Santa Margarita, California, which is about 10 miles northeast of the Pacific Ocean. The town is a quiet suburb of the larger city of Irvine, which is within Orange County, and as of 2022 had approximately 46,000 residents. It has been voted as one of the nicest and safest suburbs to live in the Los Angeles metropolitan area, with a median home price of over $770,000 and boasting an abnormally low crime rate, with violent crimes, especially homicide, being almost non-existent. Long-term residents Richard and Marcia Ann Forsberg were a part of this lovely and family-oriented community. In 2010, Richard, who was 61 years old, was a computer manager at Coastline Community College in Rancho Santa Margarita and was the husband to 60-year-old Marcia Ann Forsberg, who was a writer for local magazines and newspapers. The couple had met more than 40 years prior when they had a journalism course together at a community college of Ventura, and had been married for almost as long. Richard Forsberg had no criminal history and was seemingly well-liked, and his acquaintances considered him to be a quiet and normal guy. Richard and Marcia's relationship was the envy of many of their friends who deemed them to be the perfect couple. They openly shared kisses and affection with one another and were frequently seen holding hands. Richard even bought his wife dinner every single night at one point in their marriage. He was known to be a loving, supportive husband and his wife's rock. However, the events that would unfold on February 9th, 2010 would paint him in a much more sinister light. Marcia was known for waving goodbye to her husband Richard every morning when he left for work from the balcony of their two-story condominium. Neighbors initially found it odd that they had not seen Marcia do this in a while. Marcia Forsberg was a retired writer who wrote feature articles for the Daily Pilot, then worked at Modern Maturity, and held a master's degree in art. She was well known and adored in her community and had friends all over town, yet no one could make contact with her. Marcia Ann Forsberg seemed to have vanished into thin air, and her neighbors and friends began to wonder where she was and if something had happened to her, especially given how her husband Richard's story about her kept changing. Marcia Forsberg had recently recovered from enduring a long, hard battle with breast cancer and was suffering from fibromyalgia. For this reason alone, the information her husband was providing to those concerned about her whereabouts made no sense. First, Richard Forsberg claimed that his wife was sick from allergies and was resting. Then, when others inquired again about Marcia, he alleged that she was out in Arizona visiting some friends. But this story didn't make any sense to her family or friends either, since to the best of their knowledge, she didn't know anyone in Arizona. When asked when she was returning home, Richard would give them a specific date, but then that date would pass and still Marcia never came back. Finally, Richard admitted that she in fact had left due to their marital problems, which had escalated, and she wanted some distance between them. To some neighbors, Richard told how he was hopeful that Marcia would be back home to celebrate their 40th wedding anniversary soon. But to others, he expressed how she had left for good and did not hold back his happiness around it. Months passed without a word from Marcia Ann Forsberg by any of her friends or family. It was not in her nature to simply leave and not communicate with anyone in her life. And even though they didn't necessarily believe Richard, they didn't want to jump to any conclusion, so they didn't push it any further. One of their neighbors, Miss Alberto, noted that she found it unsettling how Richard was seen driving his wife's vehicle around for the last several months, rather than his own. Something did not sit right with her about this. Then one day, she received a letter from a close friend of Marcia's named Kathleen Dierenmeyer, who informed her that she could not get a hold of Marcia. After this, Mrs. Alberto decided to contact law enforcement regarding Marcia having gone missing. On August 25, 2010, the investigators with the Orange County Sheriff's Department inquired with her husband as to where she was. Richard Forsberg informed them that he had not had any contact with his wife since she left for Arizona that March. When investigators looked into his story, not only could they find no proof that she was ever in Arizona, but that neither her cell phone nor her credit cards had been used since February. None of this was adding up to anyone in Marcia's life, and certainly not the police. So they returned to the couple's home with a search warrant. When they showed up to search the residence, Richard Forsberg was nowhere to be found, and his wife's vehicle, her 2001 silver VW Beetle, was now missing. Richard stopped showing up at the community college for work and vanished from the area. Several different neighbors informed investigators that Richard shared plans with them that were not in sync with the Richard they knew. He said he was enrolling in an extreme survivalist course. He was taking a fishing and camping vacation, and that he was now an avid gambler. When one particular neighbor, Dave Patricevic, arrived at the house asking how he could get a thank you note to Marcia for something she had previously helped him with, Richard tried to steer away from the topic of his wife altogether and began rambling about the aforementioned camping, gambling, and survivalist outings. That didn't succeed, so when the neighbor asked again how he could get in touch with Marcia to send her a note, Richard said to just give it to him and he would ensure that she received it. This same neighbor told the investigators that Richard had expressed to him, and I quote, "I wish I had the Marcia I had 20 years ago, but if all goes well, then she should come back on our 40th anniversary." With Marcia Ann Forsberg's whereabouts being unknown for more than 6 months, and her husband, who was declared a person of interest in her disappearance, also having gone missing, the police went to the media. Thanks to a nurse at Desert Regional Medical Center in Palm Springs, who recognized Richard Forsberg as a patient there, investigators caught up to him after an alleged suicide attempt from sleeping pills while he was at a local resort casino. Richard Forsberg knew that the authorities were onto his ruse about where his wife allegedly was, and that his multiple tales of where she went and why were catching up to him. In a shocking move, he confessed to having murdered his wife in a moment of rage during an argument that got out of control, which investigators secretly recorded. This was actually a very wise move on Richard Forsberg's part because he knew the evidence, although only circumstantial, was piling up. And if he admitted guilt and claimed it was in the heat of the moment, the prosecution would likely pursue lesser charges, as it would be viewed as a crime of passion. The homicide detectives held him in Palm Springs and questioned him the entire day. Then they transferred him back to Orange County to be formally charged with murder. During his initial arraignment, he was charged with the felony count of murder with special circumstances by lying in wait. The sequence of events that night was presented to the jury as follows. Richard and Marcia Ann Forsberg were celebrating the 42nd anniversary of their first date, but Richard had returned home from work later than his wife had expected. Richard wanted to be intimate with his wife, and when Marcia rejected his advances, the direction of the evening went dark. She then accused her husband of having an affair, and an angry dispute became violent, as Marcia Ann dismissed him and proceeded to pull the covers over her head. This triggered a deep rage inside Richard, picking up a 1-pound statue of hers on the nightstand, which represented a 6-armed Hindu goddess. He struck Marcia in the head with it over and over again until she was bloodied and dead. Richard Forsberg was now faced with the body of his dead, sick wife of almost 40 years staring up at him. For the next several days, he would be consumed with the tedious and laborious process of dismembering her body. Richard cut off her head, arms, and legs with a pair of box cutters and a bone saw. He then temporarily stored the leftovers of his wife inside an old refrigerator that sat unused in their garage. Then he promptly purchased 2 different freezers, especially for this occasion, which was captured on video surveillance. It was noted by witnesses for the prosecution that he donated all of their newest appliances to thrift stores and bought a bone saw in a Westminster sporting goods store. Once inside the interrogation room, Richard Forsberg again confessed on video to killing his wife and provided investigators with very specific details of the crime, which were presented at his trial. He attempted to hide financial records, which proved that in his words, and I quote, "I was blowing money on women and gambling that she didn't know about." He then left their home in a rented RV and ventured off to Ventura County, where he drove to Lake Peru Recreation Area to get rid of her dismembered remains. It was believed that Richard Forsberg burned the pieces of her body in a park site fire pit to finally dispose of and conceal any evidence of his crime. Richard also confessed to detectives Swiderski and Thompson during the interrogation that he burnt most of the parts over 3 days, in which he stayed at different areas of Lake Peru in his RV, and then he brought the frozen torso of his 5'9" wife back with him to the house. There, according to Richard Forsberg, the process was extremely difficult, and in his own words, it was, and I quote, "like cutting a 10-inch log with a 4-inch blade. You're not going to make it. So I ended up with 4 irregular shaped pieces." He would wait until the following weekend to return to the same campsite area, in fact, the exact same fire pit, and burnt the 4 pieces of her torso there. This man, this husband of almost 4 decades to a woman, expressed 0 regret and remorse and was emotionally detached from the entire crime. It was as if a very complicated task had been set before him, and he had to come up with a plan to make it a success. It was very evident in the video recording of his confession that he was completely void of empathy or feeling towards his actions. He even went so far as to describe the dismemberment process of his wife as the motions of an assembly line, telling the investigators that it was like, and I quote, cut here, bag, wipe, freeze, on to the next step. He demonstrated in the video the different areas in which he cut up her body. Richard Forsberg stated that he was not even distraught or sickened by the process, and it was easier to commit than he would have expected. In the video confession, he said, and I quote, I remember being amazed how easy it was, that once I had killed her, everything else was incidental. As horrible as the thought of cutting off somebody's head is, it wasn't horrible. I'll block it off and do it without thinking about it. It was easier than I thought. I did stop and feel nauseated, but it was more from the thought of what I was doing than the vision of it. That surprises me. I'm not that good with bloody wounds. About the only thing I've ever done that involved blood is clean a fish. After the initial assault on his wife, Marcia, Richard Forsberg wrapped a towel around her head, which I can only imagine was gushing blood onto the bedroom floor. Her head remained wrapped in the towel the entire time he cut up her body, until it was time to decapitate her. Richard conveyed that having to take her head off gave him greater pause than the rest of the experience, but it's not as if it would have done any further damage. It was also revealed in his confession that he attempted to give absolute closure to his crime before attempting to kill himself, since he wrote a confession both on his laptop to be discovered and mailed a handwritten confession to Detective Swiderski. Richard Forsberg did not expect to wake up in a hospital with investigators waiting to arrest him. He was confident that the overdose would work, and he acknowledged that his carefully calculated plan had unraveled and that he was a total screw-up. Richard Forsberg communicated to the investigators that his plan was to kill himself versus taking the chance of getting caught, which, based on the questioning of him days earlier, he knew that his act was up. He also shared with investigators how he had not had sex with his wife in almost a decade, and for the last 3 years, he had spent more than $20,000 visiting prostitutes at massage parlors. He was not grief-stricken or horrified by what he did and wanted to take his own life. Rather, he was such an arrogant narcissist that he wanted to end his life instead of having to own up to his crimes and face justice. However, once he was in the trial court, Richard Forsberg pled not guilty. The prosecution wanted the death penalty and was pursuing charges of first-degree murder with the aggravating factors of dismemberment and concealment of a body. Friends and family of Marcia shared with the court what a kind and intelligent woman she had been. She was very passionate about reading and writing and was loved by many people in the community. Despite the strong evidence against him, without a body, the jury was deadlocked 10-2 on two separate deliberations on a conviction of first-degree murder charges. To this, the prosecutor, Ibrahim Bhatia, decided to remove the initial first-degree murder charge as an option and lowered it to second degree, to which Forsberg's defense attorney, Calvin Schneider III, agreed. The jury then went back to deliberate on second-degree murder charges instead. The jury returned in 5 minutes with a unanimous decision of guilty to second-degree murder, and the judge sentenced him to 15 years to life in prison, which means he must serve a minimum of 15 years before he would be eligible for parole in 2025. I find it shocking that the jury could not agree upon first-degree murder charges, given the circumstances. Now, if there had not been a confession, I can understand how difficult it would be for some members of the jury to convict him on capital murder charges. However, not only did they have a video confession, but they had a confession where the defendant freely admits to it not being all that difficult, at least not mentally and emotionally, to chop up his wife of almost 40 years into multiple pieces. Richard Forsberg was obviously not the person he portrayed to others, and especially not to his wife. He had been running around behind her back while she was very ill and spending their money on other women and gambling. A classic narcissist, he was intent to do whatever he feels like whenever he feels like doing it, and be damned how it may potentially affect others, in particular his own wife. He spent several days half-assed chopping up her body and stored it in the refrigerator before he could buy more proper storage for it. Then he rented in an RV, in which he spent several more days leisurely driving around the campsite, disposing of and burning different parts of his wife's corpse. It's almost as if he had two sides to him. On one hand, you had Richard Forsberg, the nerdy old man who was a computer manager at the community college, whom everyone believed loved his wife dearly, and whom he had spent years genuinely caring for during her health crisis. Then there is the other Richard Forsberg, who was sleeping with other women, specifically paying to have sex with women, spending he and his wife's money on them, gambling and partying away. These two sides were not compatible with one another. Once he was confronted with Marcia's allegations of his adultery, the dark side in him, who was tired of tending to his ailing wife and wanted a life away from her, surfaced. I am not suggesting that he was schizophrenic or had any diagnosable mental health issues, because from everything reported, that was not the case. However, it is terrifying to me how you can spend 3/4 of your entire life with someone and not have any real idea as to who they are and what they are capable of doing to you. There were no warning signs that Richard Forsberg could commit these kinds of atrocious crimes. He was not physically abusive and was not heavily involved in drinking or drugs. He was an educated man, and they were by all accounts in positive financial standing, and monetary gain in the form of life insurance was never a motive. Richard Forsberg did not have any known criminal background or history of violence with anyone. Yet at the end of the day, he bludgeoned his wife of almost 40 years to death, cut up her body into pieces, decapitated her, and burned the remains to hide her murder. What was in this man to turn against his beloved wife this way? Only Richard Forsberg really knows what pushed him over the edge that night. But the research done on this area is certainly relevant to his case. Studies conducted revealed that most cases of spousal homicide-suicide are perpetrated by older offenders. In fact, research on this particular crime in the United States demonstrates that offenders 55 years old and older represented more than 1/3 of all annual homicide-suicides. Older men were overrepresented in these cases, with 51% of the offenders being older men compared to 14% being older women. Domestic violence is a common element of these crimes, and conflict within the marriage was noted in around 1/3 of these cases. The physical health of the offender, the victim, and sometimes both, have been found to be a strong factor in the precipitation of the act. A report by Cohen and colleagues showed that for many of the perpetrators, there was a real or perceived decline in health at the time of the crime, and spouses who faced a possible separation due to ailing health were even more vulnerable. Of these older men who had murdered their wives, they were extremely likely to have been involved in the caregiving of their ill spouses. One study showed that as high as 80% of the victims had a pre-existing disease or some kind of debilitating medical condition at the time of the murder. In around 50% of the spousal homicide suicides, the husband had been a caregiver to their wife, who was inflicted with a terminal chronic disease or long-term disability. There has been a high correlation found between the illness or condition of their spouse and the stress of being their caregiver, with an increase in depression amongst these offenders. Most of these men were found to have been suffering from depression or another kind of undiagnosed mental health condition. It is natural to focus on the person suffering from the condition or disease, but it is easy to forget about their caregiver, especially if it is their intimate partner, who is making sacrifices and dealing with emotional, psychological, and physical strain. Circumstances of extreme health issues can create a great amount of stress on not just the relationship between the spouses or partners, but wreaks havoc on the psyche of the caregiver. They are likely to experience hopelessness, and this combined with severe depression and not having an outlet or source of support increases the risk that a spouse, in particular a wife, will be killed by her husband. Studies also reveal that psychopathology may be present in many of these older offenders. In a study done in Sweden, researchers discovered that for offenders 60 years old and older, the predominant diagnoses were psychosis, personality disorder, substance abuse, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, and dementia. Now, the research is still pretty minimal across all countries, as it appears to be a relatively new phenomenon of study. But the main findings are important because they indicate that a high number of these older offenders are suffering from mental health disorders. Instead of ignoring the obvious struggles that older people endure, in addition to their declining health or the health of their spouse, these serious concerns regarding their mental well-being and their safety must be discussed openly in our society so they can be treated and we can prevent such unnecessary violence. There are also issues when it comes to sex and their lack of intimacy with their partner in their later years, which can be a trigger to violence, including sexual violence. This is important to acknowledge and discuss because, according to Richard Forsberg, he had not had sexual relations with his wife, Marcia, for almost a decade. Now, granted, she was under intense medical intervention and treatments for first her battle with breast cancer and then later her struggle with fibromyalgia. So no one can blame the woman for what her spirit, mind, and body was going through. It is beyond understandable if her body could not handle, nor did she desire sex. However, that does not mean that her husband was not consumed with pent-up sexual frustration and feelings of rejection, which he turned to prostitutes to relieve. From what we know of his confession and their life circumstances, this undoubtedly created resentment and eventually formed into rage toward his wife. Please understand that this discussion is viewed through the eyes and possible motivations of the offender and not the victim, who was not responsible on any level for the vile actions and disgusting behavior of her husband. In 2022, the United States Sentencing Commission published its findings on older offenders in the federal system with some interesting, if not disturbing, results. Even though older offenders, which for this study were defined as individuals 50 years and older, make up approximately 14% of all criminal offenders, what they are involved in can be a bit surprising. Older offenders commit sexual offenses at significantly higher rates than all other age groups of criminals. They made up more than 7% of those who committed sexual crimes versus 4% of those under 50 years of age. Unlike in other criminal offenses, the chances of committing a criminal sexual act continued to increase as the age of the perpetrator went up. Offenders who were 70 years and older committed sex offenses at 3 times the rate of those offenders under 50 years old. These sexual offenses ranged across all types of categories. The commission found that older offenders were twice as likely to engage in crimes related to child pornography, three times more likely to commit sexual abuse, and they were twice as likely to commit other types of sexual offenses than offenders who were under the age of 50 years old. Regarding demographics of these types of offenders, older offenders were twice as likely to be Caucasian than offenders under the age of 50, making up more than 40% of the older offending group, and 85% were men, which is an almost identical percentage of offenders under the age of 50. Even though only 16% of older offenders had a college degree, this is three times the amount of offenders who have a higher educational attainment under the age of 50. Interesting to note is that almost one-third of all older offenders lived within five regions of the United States, and most were found amongst the Southwest. These included Southern California, which is where our featured older offender Richard Forsberg lived, in addition to the South, West, and North Texas, as well as Arizona. The highest proportion of older offenders overall were found to be residents of Guam, Hawaii, Eastern New York, Central California, and Connecticut. When older offenders are charged, a great majority of them go to trial at a rate much higher than offenders under 50. In fact, their sentences are often more severe as they age in relation to how their sentences exceed their life expectancy. With almost 40% of offenders aged 70 years and older facing this predicament. An element of sentencing is the physical and mental health of the defendant, as this is considered in regards to the severity of the penalty. However, there was also a much higher percentage of older offenders who were given the variance in their sentencing, and the mitigating factors of age and health were taken under consideration. I personally think in the case of Richard Forsberg, both the jurors and the judge took all of these elements under consideration. Despite the horrific, unimaginable actions taken by the defendant, who brutally murdered his wife of almost 40 years, cut her into pieces, and then barbecued her at various campsites, they still had trouble perceiving him as a monster. I think they saw him in grandfather form, a little man broken down by his wife's illnesses and the distance between them, which it had caused. They must have perceived him like he was not an evil man, but a man who was lonely, lost, and who had snapped in a moment of passion. His age and his attempted suicide, which they likely perceived as his weakness, his cry for help, like his plea of guilt and regret, played in his favor, as they could not convict him of first-degree murder, even though he confessed to all of his crimes. I find it asinine that he was given 15 years for his crimes, and even though the prosecutor believes that he will spend the rest of his days in prison, I would actually be shocked if he does. I suspect he will be deemed by the parole board to no longer be a risk to himself or others, is commended for being a model prisoner, and will be released in 2025, just young enough still to be a predator to some poor woman in a nursing home. These are the types of murderers which in many respects one never sees coming. That is until they strike you in the head while you lay in bed with your own goddess statue. What do you think of Richard Forsberg and the crimes committed against his wife? Do you think he just freaked out and killed her in a moment of rage? Or do you think he used the moment of rage to justify his long-term lingering desires to finally rid his life of his frail little wife? Thank you so much for listening to this story today. I beyond appreciate each and every one of you, and I am beyond thrilled to be your host. Until next time, stay safe and watch out for shades of murder happening in the streets, next door, and especially inside your own home. Alita Dogma's Shades of Murder is created, edited, written and researched by Alita Dogma. Music, courtesy of Pixabay by Ashot Denillion.